You're listening to BBC Radio Foyle from the UK City of Culture 2013. Making our future
bright. And this is Pure Culture. I'm Michael Bradley, and today we've William Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, modern comedy from an unlikely source, digital emotions, and news of one of the world's biggest names in crime fiction coming to Derry stroke Londonderry. bbc.co.uk/cityofculture.
This is Pure Culture
on BBC Radio Foyle.
Live from the UK City of Culture 2013.
Now, one of the big themes for our year as UK City of Culture is to encourage children to take up music. So far, there have been some amazing stories of hidden talent, and we hope to bring you those stories on Pure Culture. One local Catholic primary school has come up with a very simple idea, which ties in with this city's love of hymns. Let's hear what the result is with our reporter, Teresa Craig.
I'm here at the church at Nazareth House Primary School on Bishop Street, and joining me, 45 pupils from Primary 5 to 7. Next week, we'll see the launch of a very special CD featuring those angelic voices. Joanna Higgins is a music teacher, and she joins me. Joanna, what's the idea behind that CD?
Well, Teresa, we wanted to do something to mark the City of Culture year, and we decided on an educational project for the children that would involve the school choir. And we came across the Derry Hymnal, which has been stored away in a lot of chapels and churches. A lot of the songs are not sung anymore because of the folk music and a lot of the masses. So we thought it would be a lovely project to take out the Derry Hymnal and choose a lot of the really old hymns that were very popular 20, 30 years ago and teach it to the new generation of children.
When did those hymns stop? You mentioned the Derry Hymnal there. It's been a few years since I've really heard that.
There were 60,000 copies of the Derry Hymnal published around 1975, and it was used for a long time, but then in more recent years it's been put away, and although you will hear some of the songs sung regularly, a lot of them are not sung at all anymore, and we thought this would be a good opportunity for the children to revisit the Derry Hymnal and pick out some of those lovely hymns that are never heard anymore.
Why is it important to revive those types of old traditional hymns for people of this age, for children of this age?
There's such beautiful tunes. When you think back to all the Marian hymns and the hymns for the feast day of St. Patrick's and Columba, All Saints, All Souls, the children just weren't able to sing anything on those particular feast days because they didn't know any of them. And we thought, such a shame. You know, we have a fantastic hymnal full of these lovely tunes, and we just thought it would be a great opportunity for them to learn them.
Also, the thoughts of Bishop Edward Daly will be...
That's right.
Incorporated.
Bishop Daly has recorded a foreword to our CD. He was very instrumental in the publication of the first edition of the Derry Hymnal, and he was very keen that there would be Gregorian chant in that edition, so we have incorporated some of that into the recording as well. We have a couple of pieces of Gregorian chant.
Now, before we're treated to the sounds of the Nazareth House, that choir, we're going to speak to Oran Doherty, who is tenorin.
Yes, ten.
And Caitlin Doherty. And Caitlin, you're 11. Mm-hmm. Well, Caitlin, what did you enjoy most about learning about these hymns?
Well, I like it because it's something we've never heard before, and it's fun to actually be learning new things instead of just going over the same.
What's the difference, Caitlin, perhaps when you go to Mass on a Sunday now? What would the difference be between the hymns that you hear and now what you're singing?
Well, the words that are used are different, like it's older language. And that's all the difference, I think.
Did you enjoy it?
Yes, I enjoyed it.
Oran, what was the best thing about recording this CD? Because that must have been quite some job.
Yes, well, there wasn't really a best part. I think everything was just brilliant. Like going to the other places, like we recorded the CD in a church, the
Christchurch.
And it was just really fun.
And you actually got to work with some important people, didn't you?
Yes, the person who was recording, Stephen Hamill, he done all the editing for the CD,
and you got
played
to play
the organ.
And what was that experience like?
It was good listening to the organ, and I've never actually heard an organ before, so it was good to listen to new music.
Well, Joanna, if they can sing as well as they talk, We're in for such a treat.
I hope so, Teresa. We're going to sing for you one of the lovely Marian hymns, seeing as it's the month of May, and it's Hail Queen of Heaven with Nazareth House Primary School Choir.
There will be people of a certain age and a certain religious disposition that will have been brought back to their own childhood listening to that. The choir of Nazareth House Primary School, and the launch of their CD of traditional hymns is planned for Thursday, May the 30th at 7:30 Mass in St Eugene's Cathedral. And now for something completely different.
Never was a story a more woe than this of Juliet. Fair Verona, where we lay our scene.
A pair of star-crossed lovers take their life.
Romeo. Romeo.
Wherefore art thou, Romeo?
There have been many different versions of Shakespeare's classic, but they all come down to the one theme, a deadly feud and two star-crossed lovers. You heard excerpts there from versions by Franco Zeffirelli, 1968, Baz Luhrmann's 1996 version, and a brand new film directed by Carlo Carli, starring Hayley Steinfeld. You also heard some of the Royal Shakespeare's Company's versions, a version there complete with Romeo falling down, it sounded like. Well, next Tuesday, no less an institution than the National Theatre will be bringing their new production of Romeo and Juliet to the Waterside Theatre, and it's a version aimed at the younger audience. But does Shakespeare still work today? Fergal Friel is a teacher at Hollybush Primary School whose pupils are taking part in a workshop with the theatre, and Tom Burns is one of those pupils. Good morning, Tom. Good morning, Fergal.
Morning.
Fergal, Shakespeare, does stories like Romeo and Juliet and Hamlet and so on, do they still work for a young modern audience?
I think so, Michael, because the themes, the Shakespearean themes, are ageless and timeless to an extent. I mean, even Romeo and Juliet, thwarted love and desire, etc., etc. And when we were at school myself, the English teacher used to say, there's only two things worth reading or writing about, and that's love and death, and Shakespeare has that in abundance. So I think the stories are still relevant and still applicable to children as young as 10 and 11.
Yeah, Tom, you're primary seven. Are you familiar with Shakespeare's stories? Because whenever I was primary seven, I was not.
Quite, because I am a big fan of the Horrible History series.
Ah,
so
right.
There'll be bits of those in the series, so a bit, yeah.
So does that help you in understanding the stories whenever you actually do see something?
Well, a bit, yeah. There's some of the language
right.
That might be stuck on, but yeah, it helps quite well, yeah.
The language is one that as an adult, Fergal, you know, whenever I watch Romeo and Juliet, the famous Baz Luhrmann one, which is a brilliant film, but he used the original language, and, you know, I kind of had to just skim past stuff because there's so much happening and I wasn't really up to speed with all the language.
Yeah, well, that can be an issue, but I mean, it's just like when you're teaching children comprehension skills, you do not need to understand every word yeah. in order to get the gist. And the language of Shakespeare is so beautiful that I think even that in itself carries understanding and meaning for the children. If you ever watch the children watching any of the excerpts from the Shakespearean plays, they have the general gist, and it's just to refer back to what I was saying before, it's because the themes are timeless and they're not restricted by geography or anything else. I think all children can tune into the themes and they can get the gist of the story. And I mean, why not raise the language bar a bit and teach them, you know, the aspects of this language, which is what next week's event is about. It's about demystifying Shakespeare.
Yeah, what will you be doing? Do you know yet? Your workshops and so on?
Yeah, well, we've already had one of our teachers, the teacher who looks after drama, Deborah White. We had her out at a workshop all day last week, and she was trained in helping children dramatise scenes from Romeo and Juliet, and it was very, very good by all accounts. Next week, the children are taking part in a workshop on Tuesday. We've two classes doing two-hour workshops, and on the Wednesday then, we're going over to see the performance in the Waterside Theatre.
Tom, you must be looking forward to it. You're kind of a fan of the Hamlets especially, but are you looking forward to next week in the National Theatre?
Well, yeah, but we get out of school as well, so it's an added bonus.
Hey, everyone's a winner. Absolutely everyone's a winner. Tom Burns of Fergal Free, there from Hollywood's Primary. Thank you very much. And National Theatre's Romeo and Juliet. It's in the Waterside Theatre next Tuesday. There's a general performance next Tuesday, 7 o'clock. Tickets are £9.50, adults £6.50 for children.
Thank you, mate.
This is Pure Culture
on BBC Radio Foyle.
Live from the UK City of Culture 2013.
And now for the latest in our series based on the BT Portrait of a City project. Today, Bridgine Temple remembers someone who was once a familiar face in the city centre.
I'm at Andy Ferguson's on William Street. Left Amy outside in the pram sitting. She was only weeks old. The shop was packed with clothes, so you couldn't really get a pram in. So I went on and kept keeping a wee eye on the pram outside. And when I looked out, one time Sheila was standing at the pram. So I went out there and she asked me, was it a wee boy or a wee girl? And I was telling her it was a girl and what age was it? And the next thing then, she asked me then, have you money? So I thought, right, this is for a wee drink problem that she had. So I gave her a pound and the next thing she put her head right under the pram and was chatting away to the baby, lifted her head out and says, thank you. And away she went and waved and God bless and all the rest of it. And I happened to look under the pram to make sure Amy was all right and here the pound was sitting in the pram beside her. And I thought, that critter has nothing. And maybe that pound was her only money that morning sort of thing. And here she's give it to the baby. I could have cried. You could have knocked me down with a feller. I thought that's a Christian there, definitely. I never really spoke to her at all after that or even before that. Just as she was begging, looking for money, and you would have given her whatever coins or whatever you had, you know. But it's just when I seen her over at the pram, I thought, right, I might better go out here, you know, because I myself was stolen as a baby. My mum was looking at photographs of me as a baby in Austin's of the Diamond. And she says the entrance then was at the Diamond. There were steps down, so she couldn't take the pram down. And she left the pram sitting outside and kept looking out to see it was okay. The proofs of the photographs come along, and she says it took her a wee while looking through them. And whenever she looked out, the pram was away, me and the pram. So she run out, and at that stage we lived just off Bishop Street, but my mother was originally from the Waterside. So she panicked, she ran down Fergie Street, couldn't see anybody or anything, on down Carlisle Road, and here this Scottish couple were pushing me and the pram down Carlisle Road, a man and a woman, as nice as you like. And she ran down, pulled the pram off them, and she says she ran crying the whole way to the Waterside, dear Mahler's house, rather than go home.
Bridgine Temple there, talking about Sheila Brennan, who featured in the photograph which she submitted to the BT Portrait of a City project. You can see it if you go to our website, bbc.co.uk/radiofoyle.
On FM, medium wave and online.
This is BBC Radio Foyle.
From the UK City of Culture.
By day, he crunches the numbers as a Millennium Forum's finance director, but by night, Jim Gallagher prefers treading the boards as an amateur actor and playwright, and his latest work debuts tomorrow night. Jim Gallagher, good morning to you. No surprise where your comedy drama is being staged. It's on the Forum?
It's on the Forum, yes.
Yeah, I can assure you, I'm sure there was no favours pulled there, so this is quite a big work. A night in A&E. I can imagine what the subject matter is.
Well, the subject matter is a night in A&E. Yes. It's based on a lot of experience. since I was born. Like, I had trouble medically all my life, and out of A&E, with dislocations of bones and stuff, and I had my left patella removed when I was 14, over and back and stuff, and then I have a son of 22, and he's the same problem,
right?
You know, he's got what they call soft tissue within the joints.
So they know you were an A&E.
Yeah, well, they know me coming over and back. So sort of just sitting there, you know, and listening. You know, that's amazing, the stuff you pick up. So really the play is wrote around, you know, sort of past experience and what I've heard and what I've seen in A&E. And it's based, there's 16 of a cast.
Right.
There's 8 patients and 8 medical staff, and they're all local actors, and, you know, we're really looking forward to tomorrow night.
It actually sounds like the start of a soap opera. You know,
there could be a sequel.
Move Over Casualty.
There could be a sequel on the,
horizon. So, as I said, an accountant by profession, of course, you know, you've worked for quite a number of places around here, but you've always been involved in sort of acting, really, haven't you?
Yeah, long life. Yeah, it's about 40 years. So way back to my scouting days, you know, when I was club leader, back with the 8th Derry and Chantal, and we'd done wee sort of concerts and all up in the Marion Hall. Aye. And started from there, and then I got involved with T.C. Doherty and a few productions before I went to England, you see, in 1980.
Right.
And as I was involved over there as well with drama and drama groups. Then when I came back in the early 90s, I joined The Grove, called Tony Rest O'Donnell. Tony O'Donnell, yes. And I'd done pantomimes and stuff with that up until... And then I joined the Londonderry Music Society.
Yeah.
And done a lot of shows with them.
Although, that's a big step, though. You've written and you're performing. You're involved in the performance, obviously, of A Night in A&E. Is this the first time that you've sort of authored a full work on stage?
Yeah, it is, yeah. It's, you know, that's where the nerve-wracking thing is. You know, it's going to be the audience reaction to, you know, something that you've wrote from start to finish. Like, I started back in November of 2011. I finished it the early part of this year. And I was putting it all together, you see, and I said to David, our chief executive, you know, could I maybe put it on the forum and this City of Culture year, you know, which would be good for the play and for, you know, for the city sort of thing. And he said, I no problem at all, you know, and he's given me the base to do it, you know, and put it on tomorrow night.
Brilliant.
And I say we're just really looking forward to it, you know.
Okay, well, you'll be going back into work on Thursday morning, and I'm sure people are saying, you know, Dot Jim, that was brilliant. It's tomorrow night in the Millennium Forum, A Night in A&E.
Yeah.
Jim Gallagher, author and performer, thank you very much for coming in. And sad news this morning for comedy lovers, actually. The commentator Eddie Braben, the third man behind the success of Markham & Wise, died this morning at the age of 82 after a short illness.
This is Pure Culture
on BBC Radio Foyle.
Live from the UK City of Culture 2013.
Now, see if you know who this is a description of.
He is an ex-military MP from the US Army who is now just a wanderer. Having served in the military man and boy in a very dislocated way, he's come home to the States and he's just wandering around looking at the country of his citizenship that he's never really seen before. But beneath the surface, he's a really ancient character. He's the noble loner, the mysterious stranger.
If you don't know, then I'll tell you. That's Jack Reacher, the hero of the best-selling series of novels by the crime writer Lee Child. And that was Lee Child himself describing him. And Lee Child is coming to Derry for a crime writers event organised by well-regarded local author Brian McGilvey. Lee Child is the headline guest in what will be a full weekend of murder and mystery this November. 70 million copies of the Reacher novels have been sold. Not a bad figure for one of Brian's literary heroes.
The biggest selling UK writer, I think, in the world at the moment. And absolutely no problem in getting him to agree to it. I mean, he was more than willing to come. I think his family originally from Derry. Strangely, he's an uncle from the Bogside, apparently.
Hold on. That's quite a big fact that you're just sort of rushing through. Because Lee Child, of course, is a pen name.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
His own name's Grant.
Grant, yeah. And Lee, he had worked with Granada for years and then was fired. And the crime writing was kind of a reaction to that. He had, I think he just had time on his hands and decided he was going to try writing. And he and his wife were in the supermarket one day. Now, Lee is himself, he's about 6'6". He's very, very tall. And they were in the supermarket one day and someone asked him, would he get something off the top shelf for them, a tin of beans or something, because they couldn't reach up to it. And his wife said, you could get a job as a reacher.
Hence Jack Reacher.
This is where I got... Thank you.
And that's all from Pure Culture this morning. Tonight at the Nerve Centre, San Diego post-punk band Pierce the Veil are on stage. Tickets are £12. The Earhart Festival, one of the city's leading community events, continues for the rest of the week with over 40 events, including the prestigious Amelia Earhart Awards in Guildhall Square and the Earhart Flappers Ball at the City Hotel. And did you know that Amelia Earhart landed in Derry on this very day in 1932? And don't forget, tickets are still available for Status Quo, 22nd of June in the venue. That's all from Pure Culture this morning. Sarah Brett is here tomorrow. Stand by for Sean Coyle. From me, Michael Bradley, good morning.